Good afternoon. This is the regular meeting of the Citizens Oversight Committee acting as the Citizens Finance Advisory Committee. Today is Tuesday, October 15, 2024, and if we could call to see if we have a quorum at this point.
Vice Chair Woody?
Here.
Member Johnson?
Here.
Member Dorfman?
Here.
Member Love?
Here.
Quorum is established with Chair Peck absent.
Okay. Next that we see on the agenda after the quorum is committee member announcements and presentations. Verbal, do we have any subcommittee updates going on up here today?
Was that us?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, is there anything you'd like to, presentations or announcements you'd like to make?
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Start.
Yeah. So we started by addressing the Morro Bay Revenue Opportunity CFAC Tax Force, which Stephen Peck put together, if you were at the last meeting. And he had a number of options that we should look at. And so we wanted to first just comment on the options that he had and then bring in some of our thoughts and some of what happened in the 2015 study. And I guess we're all in for a lengthy review here. Is that the case? Okay. Chairman brought in the paid parking. We felt like right now it's maybe polarizing. There was some success in some cities, and maybe in some other cities like Slo and Paso, it didn't work quite well. His second part about what had been previously studied was the added sales tax. So we felt we needed a little more clarity on if we increase taxes on something, how much, what percentage is going to go to the county versus what percent comes back to Morro Bay. So there were conversations that maybe the county could adjust some of their taxes, maybe something like 0.5% or 0.05%, and say we'll defer some of that to Morro Bay. And I think Steve's point was that they might want to help Morro Bay be in a better position to support the traffic that comes from Slo County. So that was our kind of our thoughts on that is, and I think, Jean, you made a point about that the current ballot, was that on that one there as well? Go ahead.
I just wanted to add that four cities in the county are currently looking at increased sales taxes for this on their ballots. And it would be very helpful to see the results of those votes in terms of determining whether that might be a feasible option for Morro Bay. Just keeping in mind that from what I can tell, Morro Bay's aggregate tax is at the high end of the county.
We're at the top level of the city imposed sales tax.
Already, without an increase. So those ballot votes will show the appetite among other county citizens, you know, AG, Slo, I forget the two others, whether that's something that citizens are willing to support, and then we can open that up or not.
There was a suggestion on parcel tax, and that failed in the last elections for various reasons. We talked about reserve requirement. A high reserve requirement limits the amounts of each revenue dollar that can go to actual services and improvements. Stephen suggested we review the city's current GF reserve requirement, emergency reserve, what current future funds could be freed up. We think this is a really good idea. So we're behind this. City property sales and development. Does anyone need more clarity on what that is?
You know, obviously, I would just say send something brief so the people at home can hear this as well. So it's in the minutes. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So we need information on real estate in the portfolio, all lease revenues, especially the Market Plaza, the old Morro Bay Elementary School property. We need to review the 2020 study that talked about the surplus property evaluation. And then maybe you can help me here, Michael. I thought we had a subcommittee looking into leases on the harbor, and did it get halted? Because we feel like we don't want to go down the same road and have these. Then let me go ahead, Michael.
Oh, no.
No, I need to hear from you.
We had a subcommittee that was put together, my gosh, I'm going to say a year ago.
Yeah, it was exactly a year ago because it was the meeting I missed.
Oh, okay, there you go. Right at about a year ago to explore the different options when it comes to putting ourselves in a better financial position along the Embarcadero for all the properties along there. The committee came up with some recommendations. Exactly where those recommendations went, I'm not 100% sure at this point, but I believe that they were, but I know that the committee wrapped up its final recommendations on that. We had a lot of discussions within ourselves, but that actually, those recommendations ended up going back to the Harbor Patrol, Harbor Department. Where exactly those went from there, I'm not 100% sure.
Okay, so we see that the city has three issues currently for their leases. You have good updated leases, good leases that need to be updated, and then you have leases that are confusing, not clear, and or contentious. So I believe the first two potentially could be easily addressed, and the last is a different story, and maybe we could draw from some things and maybe get the city above board. I mean, I believe in the relationship, so that may not be easy when something's contentious, but, you know, did you have any other thoughts on that? We really like moving forward with his proposal of city property sales and development. We'd just like to be better educated on what your options are and how to look at that, and it's quite a boon for the city. The other, he talked about general property development. The recommendation was we punt, so we're not going to address that. And then the second was new revenue. Do you want to talk about 2015 at the kickoff, or how do you want to do that?
Sure.
You and I had some ideas, but.
Yeah, that was just the addition to Steve Peck's suggestions from us, that we believe that just increased focus, branding, marketing on Morro Bay would be a major contributor to revenue growth, just because there is such, in particular in the area of tourism, because there is so much growth in this county, and we seem to be lagging a bit in that regard. In fact, I was just reviewing the HDL sales tax revenues and noticing that both in the hotels, restaurants, and in the gas revenues, Morro Bay revenues were way under both the rest of the state. So that's something I'm, especially since we get so much from both those areas, disproportionate to other locales. So, we had quite a few ideas in that regard. One was increased focus on attracting the Cal Poly, highly affluent, well, and Cuesta as well, but Cal Poly in particular, the student demographic. They account for a lot of spending in this county, and there's a lot of, I was just near High Street Deli in Baywood, and I was just shocked to see how busy that can get, because they took a slow student icon and brought it to Baywood, and it's just packed. So, you know, similar things here would, especially given our, you know, our backdrop, it's just, could do really well. And that kind of overlaps with one of the recommendations from the 2015 study, where they talked about targeted development, which isn't just seeing who decides to pop into Morro Bay and look at a lease, but proactively going out and marketing to specific businesses or sectors and saying, hey, we've got this great building, or we've got, you know, this set of demographics or whatever it is. I mean, having real estate to offer, whether it's the city's owned real estate or just available from somebody else, that's an important thing. And then touting the benefits of this area. I think that we could.
Gene, let me just, on that note, I heard the Bird Migration Festival or the Bird Festival, there's 1,000 people signed up to go to the Bird Festival. We're a migratory path. We're a seasonal community. We don't have a whale migration festival. Just easy things that have been done everywhere, because who else can have a a bird festival. I mean, it's not normal to have so many species of birds. So just building on the success that we have, building on the success of other communities, and the suggestion from 2015 is taking the success from SLO and importing that into Morro Bay. A lot of these companies that are successful want to overlap into a community where they have these beautiful ocean views and whatnot. A lot of satellite cities have been developed through the main city, and then people going, gosh, it's gotten crowded here. I'm sure the leasing in Morro Bay has to be less than SLO, I would imagine, by, you know. So we did feel that potential we could do, which has been done before, where Morro Bay is in a relationship with Cal Poly and Cuesta to have a shared vision of the marketing that could be happening in Morro Bay. So I know this sounds crazy, but for example, did you know 18% of our sales tax comes from the gas stations? Is there any marketing and visibility at the gas stations, let alone at Cal Poly or Cuesta? I mean, we really feel like the branding and marketing leads to sales and more people, and we're hoping that could be one way that we branch it. It's something we did at one point with the business community, having a relationship over with those two colleges, and we did that with the athletic environment as well. It's a great overlap, and it could be an easy way that Morro Bay gets to reflect on their marketing and branding from kind of a fresh perspective without having to meddle into why they aren't or haven't.
I'll just say, as a birder, I love mentioning the bird festival. I've attended both years since I moved here, and it's such a successful event, and I think there's a ton of room for collaboration with community organizations that are already doing great work. I think Gene and I, you know, we noted like the ecotourism piece during our special meeting a few weeks ago. I think that's a huge area of growth for the city. So I'm excited to see what you all continue to come up with.
Can I just on the ecotourism, because I got worked up. There was some dialogue about sea otters and what their real value is to Morro Bay. And I didn't realize no one here has spent time in Carmel, which has just been like, that's their sacred animal there. And so I'm like, wait, the otter has to be worth a lot. First of all, the funding for otters in the last 20 years in Carmel is just enormous. The funding for sea otters in the last 2 years through Carmel, through other, there's so much money available through funding grants. And by the way, it's not easy to have a sea otter around because they're very picky on the environment they need. And guess what? Your asset is you have these sea otters. So, you know, I do what we all do, right? I turn on the internet and say, gosh, something. So this is through, you know, they spent, like you guys, tons of money on consultants in Monterey and everything to get all this figured out. How much is an otter worth? For ecotourism, millions, a new study finds. And then there's all the support on why it is. And here we are. And to your point, and other people have talked about what the asset you have at the sand spit. You have this whole environment. So a lot of that stuff doesn't cost you any money. It's the right visibility. If I'm at the gas station, I want to see a sea otter there.
A sign with a sea otter.
We're going to sign a sea otter to go there? And the sea otter could do signing? Awesome. All right, Michael. Are we almost there?
I think so. I really appreciate all the work that you guys have done on this. I've got a couple questions, though. One of which is that what would be the next steps for this task force that and the work that you guys are doing? What do you see as next in all of this?
Gene, please follow after me, but I think that what we talked about in terms of the real estate, I think that's a...
Yeah, just getting that comprehensive assessment of the city properties and possibly even commercial properties.
I mean, it would be nice to help the city organize what their options are. If they want to sell something, that's great. Well, then what are you going to do with the money? Well, we're going to do this. I mean, it would just be more about... Anyway, so that would be number one. For me, and number two would be, which again, I've had a lot of familiarity with the process, which is to do outreach to the college community and bring them into our branding and marketing. That would be my two. And then, Jean, I'm not sure.
I think lots of interviews with various subject matter experts and local people who would have some good viewpoints on this.
So clearly what I'm seeing here is that your work is not done at this point, and the task force is still continuing to work from today forward. Am I correct?
Yeah, I think, Steve thought as a one-year process, so. Mm-hmm.
And also, Woody, if at some point we can send you the 10 points that they had in a 2015 mm-hmm. for this same committee, and it seems to be an incredible overlap, so we'd use that a bit as an outline as well.
Okay. One of the things that I've always, and I'll get to my second point in 1 second, one of the things I've always noticed here is making sure that we communicate correctly to staff, because a lot of times elected boards, we fail to do that for you guys at times.
Yeah, well, I see that them as a major resource to talk to at the very beginning.
Is there a need to have for you guys, and maybe you already have this, a breakdown of all the city property that we have here in Morro Bay? Because I know all of you are working on this right now. Is there a point to asking staff to saying, is there some type of file or some information we could get back to you guys, or would you need something like this that said, here are the properties that we have that the city of Morro Bay owns and the lease agreements on those properties? Now, let me parse out the Embarcadero for 1 second, because that is an entire discussion to itself.
Yeah.
And I'm not looking, right. Right, exactly. Let me parse this out. But I want to make sure that we give direction to staff over something that they can prepare and say, okay, here's what they're looking for. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but it sounds like what you're looking for outside of the Embarcadero leases, which is a whole different ballgame, mm-hmm. but the properties that we have non-Embarcadero lease that we have here in the city of Morro Bay that could possibly help out what you guys are looking for and get a breakdown of what properties we do have. Is that something that...
Yeah, and that surplus property evaluation study, which...
From 2020.
Whatever that is.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Not at all.
Or, I want to make sure that, you guys can communicate with them over what...
We want to keep it very narrow.
Yeah.
We want to keep it very narrow, and the reason we brought up Steve's points is we felt like we should address what was out there, and then from what was out there, we spun it down to probably number one, of course, would be the real estate, and number two, which was really also number one, would be the branding and marketing.
Even though this is not an action item on the agenda at this point, do we have the ability to ask staff to provide this subcommittee with those type of documents when it comes to... Do we have the ability to direct staff to do that here today, even though it's not an action item on the agenda? You have that look on your face.
I like it, Mike.
I think that it was already established that there would be ongoing communication between staff and the subcommittee, so
okay.
Email to us.
Right, that little part there, if you wanted to look, or I can read that.
Well, I don't have my glasses.
That was from that last meeting.
Got it.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and I just wanted to make sure that communication...
Sounds like we've made with the city staff, including the city manager, and hopefully from there.
Okay, good. Okay, so that's...
I like the question, and I'd love a yes.
Yeah, so as long as the communication is still going. But I also wanted to make sure that we didn't violate what we were able to do up here. Okay. The next point I'd like to bring up is that... And this is something that's always been my perspective of this. I think for far too long in the city of Morro Bay, we have been... grossly fascinated over what I would call low-hanging fruit and the easy things to do here in this town and to discuss, which always comes into whether it be Measure Q, Measure E, taxes, how do we increase revenue, how do we make ourselves more visible, how do we capitalize on an incredible natural environment that we have here. And that is an important function of all of this. I agree with that. What I'd like to see, and I have not spoken to Chair Peck over this one, is I'd like to also see a discussion where we talk about what can we do to expand our tax base here in terms of bringing in different types of economy beyond simply the festivals on the weekend. Turning this place, turning Morro Bay, an amazing community, into nothing more besides a visitor's place. Hey, come here to Morro Bay, stay for the weekend, have lunch, have dinner, yada, yada, yada. But what we're not talking about is saying, let's look at something different. Let's take a look at what does it take to bring in high-dollar jobs. What does it take to bring in the tech industry? What does it take to bring in those types of people here in order to bring in those jobs that would really benefit this community? Because a lot of the jobs that we see in the visitors, for Visitors Bureau, for the hotels and whatnot, though they do generate taxes, they're incredibly important, especially when you have a coastal community. They're not the sustainable tax base that you really need in any community. What my fear of Morro Bay has always been the same. Are we gradually turning this place into a place that people just see as, oh, this is a great place to come for the weekend. This is why I retired here, because I went here 20 years ago and now I've retired here. But what we're not seeing here is we're not seeing, gee, I'd like to locate my business here and do tech work here, or I'd like to locate my business here and bring these high-paying jobs here. Is that a discussion that you guys could also pursue as well?
Yeah, I noticed that was a big focus of that previous study. We didn't broach it, but I can see, for example, looking at the real estate assets, that is sort of a, that's one of the areas that could open that up, just because if you want more than remote workers, because I met lots and lots of remote workers here from corporations and nonprofits and who, you know, move here for quality of life. So, you know, case in point at the end. So what's, yeah, and we do need head of household jobs. Morro Bay jobs, I mean, a study that was done over 10 years ago, our average salary is half the level of Slo County, just because they are all, yeah, 30, it was literally half, because it was so many waitress and janitor and food service jobs. It would be a boon to have the head of household jobs and how to get more of a whole business instead of just individual employees. Again, real estate is kind of a core part of that.
So Michael, what I'm wondering from what I've seen in some of the sports, especially North County, San Diego, is, again, it's the overflow. All of a sudden, the action sport industry shows up. So now, you know, you have your sunglasses people and you have your clothing people. So there's overflow and slow, potentially, of businesses that may want to have a showpiece office. That's something we have to offer. Or again, someone who's putting, I'm not sure what type of businesses you're looking for, but I do think businesses are attracted to showpiece locations.
I think I'm speaking for a lot of people in this community when I say I'm looking for those businesses that go beyond a restaurant or beyond the businesses that simply serve the tourism that comes here, which, like I said, I don't want to downplay that or say it's not important, because it is extremely important, absolutely. But we can't build an economic base here on that alone. And I think that's pretty well known that we can't do that. So what I'm looking for is, what can we do as a community to take those next steps? What can we do as a community to say, let's start having those businesses locate here that are, you know, companies that are of 20 people, mm-hmm. 20, 30 people.
Let's do our outreach on that. We agree. We should find those businesses.
Absolutely.
It's the successful businesses that have the opportunity to look at office space in a pristine location. That's mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I mean, I don't think
they love to have their headquarters looking at the ocean.
I don't think there's anybody that I talk to in which I say I live in Morro Bay, and that the first thing they say is I wish I lived there. I mean, it's everywhere. It's unbelievable. So people want to live here. They want to come here. They desperately want to buy a home here until they see how much something costs. And we have all that, but it's like what we're missing is that last step that says, let's bring your company here. What does it take to bring your company to this town? What does it take to make you say, bring your construction company? You have a construction company somewhere along the Central Coast or whatever, and tell them, hey, listen, you know, you guys are located here. Great. What would it take to put your company here in downtown Morro Bay? What does it take to bring...
Yeah. It can merely be their satellite. So again, it's this idea from 2015, which is, let's find these successful companies that are a good fit, and let's see where they stand.
Yeah, because I mean, too many times we have these discussions with people that say, hey, that's great, you know, love you to come here and visit Morro Bay and whatnot, but the next question should be, hey, who do you work for? you own this company over here, you own this law firm, you own this construction company, you own this small tech business, whatever it is, why isn't your headquarters in Morro Bay? And I feel like sometimes those become the discussions that I know we have, but those aren't the discussions that are being done out there as far as outreach to businesses. And I see what the incredible work that you guys are doing can parlay into that. And hopefully it will, and I'm sure it will.
And I do have one question, which is, does Morro Bay see itself as upsizing, getting an upside on selling real estate and or upside on revenue created through leasing real estate? And have they looked at which position is better in which situation? In other words, I have no idea of your portfolio. So I have no idea what you're leaving on the table or what you're competing with yourself. But I do know that there can't be much bigger assets going on for you that are mobile as your real estate. So those are some of what I'm wondering about, because do we want to sell a building to someone or do we want them to come in and lease it for 50 years?
I think that's a discussion I'm sure you'll have, you guys will continue to have with
right. So
staff. And
without information,
right.
I have no clue.
But
we're with you, Mike, on the right people, and we have the right stuff, and we've seen towns build with that.
Yeah, because I've seen a lot of discussions in this town by some amazingly talented people that I think are incredibly well-meaning, but sometimes I feel like even the most well-meaning people miss the point, which is this town has to be more than a tourist destination. Because a tourist destination is nothing more besides low-paying jobs that really don't build on our base and build on the fact of the most fundamental issue, which is people want to come here. They want to move here. Everybody is saying to themselves, I'd give anything to live in Morro Bay, call it my home, buy a home, build a home, and live here. So I feel like there's that last little connection we've got to make. And I don't know what that connection is at this point. I wish I did.
But I do think the natural step in this is to bring in the peripheral businesses that are successful and that they're expanding. When they expand, we want them to expand where we are.
Yeah.
It, you know, there was a time when everyone was in La Jolla, then they were in Del Mar, then mm-hmm. we're in Solana Beach, then they're in Encinitas, then they're in Lucada. We're just lined up in the same way.
Yeah, and likewise on the flip of it, what we have to make sure that we do in this town is that we don't lose an identity of who we are and what we are. Because that's why people want to be here. They don't want to be here because we wake up one day and say, I have an idea. Let's put a 7-story hotel right there on the Embarcadero. That will make them say, this isn't what I want to be a part of. We'll lose the identity of who we are. It's keeping the identity of who we are that's making this place attractive. And the moment we lose that identity, then we just become nothing more besides every other small little town along California or in the United States that lost its identity along the way. And then everybody says, I want to go somewhere else. That's something we can't lose in all of
this. Yeah, and Michael, that's why I'd like to have the opportunity to do a joint venture with Cal Poly and with Cuesta, because I strongly believe in branding, and I think yeah. once the branding dictates a lot of what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
and it's the branding that people went to San Diego. They didn't care what they're like. What, I can be down by the beach?
Yeah.
So I'm with you there.
Okay. So what would be the next steps from here then? What do you guys would be just
like
continue
we're
the meetings?
To meet is mm-hmm. what Steve said. Initial meeting with city staff, including city manager. He said that would be the next step.
Okay.
Or whatever you think, Chairman.
Hey, you guys are the smart ones here.
I'll just add quickly, you know, talking about tourism throughout this, but yeah, at the end there, you know, I love partnering with our educational institutions, but I think we also have like great resources in Morro Bay too. Like, and honestly, I don't know like the official title, if it's the Tourism Board, but like Visit Morro Bay.
Oh yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah. And we'd definitely be talking to Michael
yeah.
Wombolt and yeah.
Okay, great. I just hadn't heard them mentioned, so I think. They're a great resource. Obviously, the Chamber of Commerce, you know.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of really great local partners that we can engage. So.
Okay. I hope all that made sense to our city staff. they have a smile on their face, that means we did something right up here today. That's always good to know that. We are also still on the committee member announcements and presentations. Member Love, you and I sat recently on a small little subcommittee that helped divvy up $60,000 of, I believe it's called social services money, is that what it's called?
Community grants?
Community grants.
Thank you, community grants, thank you. This is why you're here too. Do you want to do a quick little presentation on what we did in there in that meeting and quick little
sure.
update?
Sure, yeah, I'll give a quick update. Yeah. So council member Cindy Edwards reached out to Michael and I and another member of the community who is not on CFAC, but her name is also Jean. And we met, the three of us and Councilmember Edwards, we met, I'd say like 2 weeks before the council meeting last week and took an afternoon and reviewed all of the grant applications that were sent to us and provided recommendations to the council based on those. The council had a good discussion at last Tuesday's meeting. I think there are a lot of great organizations that are going to be benefiting from these discretionary funds. I think it's a great, like, kind of array of missions. Like, many of them are focused on human needs, whether it's like homelessness or senior nutrition or the PTA. But then there are also a few that are focused on the ecotourism and conservation piece. Like, going back to what you were talking about earlier, Brian, one of the orgs is called Sea Otter Savvy. So I forget exactly how much they were granted in the final allotment, but just wanted to make a note of that because they're doing some work particularly around sea otters in Morro Bay. Yeah, that's kind of my report, Michael. I don't know if you have anything else to add.
Yeah, just real quick for the community that's listening in on this, just as a reminder, this year was interesting because the community was asking for, I think it was $114,000 of ask, and we only had $60,000 to work from. So that in itself put us in a little bit of a pickle of saying, okay, welcome to being on a committee where nobody's going to like you at the end of the day. Gene understands that one. The other one is that if I remember this correctly, and Member Love, you can help me on this, we're not going to have $60,000 next year. I think next year it's 35. Mm-hmm. Is that it? We're going to have 35,000 of discretionary? Yeah, so that 60,000 is going down to 35,000 next year. I think most of the organizations understand that. I know that there was also a brief discussion by the council, and I've reached out to the mayor and to Councilmember Landrum about this, and also Councilmember Edwards, letting them know that, if there's anything we can do to provide input on how to make for a better way to go through all this next year, that would be great. I know on a personal note, what came to my mind was when we were going through all these discussions, if you remember, there was almost that feeling that I had where I wish I had the group in front of me and I could ask them to clarify things in their application. I almost felt like in some respects what we should have for this application process is some level of interview where, we can go through the application like going through a resume and hiring somebody and saying, hey, this really looks great, but we do have some questions here. Unfortunately, what we were left with, which is the norm, which is we have a bunch of applications, we have people that we can't ask questions to, and all we can do is that if we can't find the answer in here based on our questions that we're having internally, all we could say is, well, we don't know, what the answer is here. I know a couple of the groups had, there were questions we had in regards to what do you plan on doing with this money. I know one particular group, and I won't single them out because it's unfair, they were asking for, they wanted to make a purchase of an object. And the problem was that they said, we want to purchase this object, but they didn't tell us anything about the object or why it's going to cost them X amount of dollars to purchase this object. That'd be like coming to anybody and saying, hey, if we came to you and you give us $3,000 to install a bench, but they don't tell us what kind of bench, exactly how it's going to be installed, what type of plaque you're going to put on it, why this is costing $3,000. And all of a sudden the city says, hey, here's $3,000 to install a bench. And they end up going over to Costco and buying a $200 bench and putting it in the middle of the field. Be prepared to be yelled at by a lot of angry constituents in this community. Why did you pay $3,000 for a $200 bench? So those were the types of problems that I found that we were running into, is that we needed more than just, we like this money to do this. We needed a full explanation over. And I felt like sometimes if we had an ability to interview these people, that would have helped some of this.
Yeah, I mean, there were certainly questions left unanswered. And like you said, next year we're going to have about half the amount of funds. So it's going to be even more difficult, like, to divvy up whether or not, you know, we are involved in that process in the same way. Again, it's going to be difficult for whoever is doing that. And I remember Council Member Edwards saying that she hoped for kind of a revamp of the community grants application. And so I think an interview piece could be a great recommendation, you know, to include as part of that.
If we were to do a recommendation to council over something like that, and obviously we want your input as well over a system like this, is that something that we can do from this dais here through staff, through maybe, I don't want to say staff direction, but, you know, I'm trying to figure out a way, how do we communicate that properly from CFAC to the council from this point here? And or maybe what we could do is, being that it's a little ways off, can we agendize an item for the next CFAC meeting where we bring in some ideas of how we would change the system for next year, and so that way we could do it more of an action item and say, you know, here's the three recommendations we'd like to officially give to the council from CFAC and vote on those.
I love the idea of you giving that feedback, especially while it's fresh in your mind.
Yeah.
And you are the great, perfect group to do that, since you've just gone through this process. Doing it here in CFAC, I think, is not the best way. It's a council objective, and so I think you should communicate directly with council, probably through Council Member Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
That's okay.
No, I didn't.
I didn't have my microphone.
Okay.
It was on. Okay, so,
can
I pick that up, though, Michael?
You could come to, you could make public comment, you could do an email to council. But I think the communication should be directly with the council.
Okay, you wanted to comment.
I'd like to just pick that up. And I'm sorry, because last year there was extensive communication about the process and how it could be improved. Gene and I were there with Cindy, and like these all said, I mean, it shouldn't, there's a few easy recommendations. It shouldn't be done in one day, and people need time to look at it and then think about it. These are important implications. I was disappointed there was someone wanted a floor in the new floor in their in the art building and whatnot, and they were getting allocated the money and no one had even looked at the floor. You know, it's kind of like, if they want to be fair about it, it's going to take more time. It was strongly recommended that in the future we're able to see what we need to do. We're able to go and do some of our own homework. As these guys said, they felt like there was more. So I just felt like there was no shortage of communication after last year about the shortfalls. And without any accountability, we have another situation where then it's done exactly in the same way. So I think this is part of our concern with following revenues. Like, at what point do we just get thrown off track? So I'm with you. I don't think you can do it in a day like that.
No, probably not. And you know what? Maybe I think staff is right on that. And Councilman, I mean, Member Love, you tell me what your thoughts on this. I mean, maybe we should just sit down and just have a direct conversation with the our council member representative, Council Member Edwards, and we sit down and have a talk with her directly about what we see in the process that could change for next year.
The earlier we start, the higher likelihood that, you know, something substantive changes, yeah, in the next application. So okay. I love that idea.
So how about you and I get a hold of Council Member Edwards, we'll sit down and have a talk with her and go through that. Okay,
yeah.
We'll go ahead and do that. That's a great idea.
Excellent. And perhaps council could agendize that. It would be up to council as a group, since it's their objective.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Exactly. Okay.
Great.
Okay, well, that is probably the longest committee member announcements and presentations we've ever done in the history of CFAC. Anything else? You're drinking, so you're good. Okay, the next issue on the item is a brief finance director update.
Yes, thank you. I will just give you a few brief updates on what the finance department has been up to. So we're still pushing forward on our development impact nexus and fee update. We met with our consultants today, and we are incrementally making process. In the beginning like this, it's a lot of data that they need, and so we need to gather it, submit it, review it, see what's missing, and check off what's there. So it's been a long process so far, but we are pushing forward, and now at this point looking at an implementation date of 7/1/2025 rather than January 1, which was our very optimistic goal. Next, we're still working on kicking off our user fee update, which is an impact to our master fee schedule. That was last updated. Well, we do a CPI and CCCI update annually, but we last had the full study done, I believe it was 2019, and the goal is to have that done approximately every 3 years. So we're a little bit behind schedule, but we're kicking that off shortly. That takes involvement from every department, looking at the time it takes to do every little task and working towards cost recovery. So we'll be getting started on that soon, and with the goal implementation date also of July 1, 2025. We are hoping to finish closing our books by this Friday, which is why Megan Scottberg isn't with us today. She's sweating over her computer trying to wrap some things up and meet that deadline. Meeting the deadline of this Friday will allow us to meet our deadline of wrapping up our annual comprehensive financial report before the holidays, which is what I really would like to do for everyone this year. We have our 2024 TOT audit underway. We have draft audit reports ready for the 15 properties that were audited this year. So we'll be getting those notifications out to folks soon. And lastly, I just wanted to mention to you that our city manager will be out of town for a few weeks. She's going to the League of California Cities Conference this week, and then she'll be out of town for 2 weeks on personal business, tending to her parents, which she shared with people. So while she is out, the director of Public Works, Greg Kwalik, will be the acting city manager. That concludes my brief update.
It's good to know that Greg's going to be in charge of all this for the next few weeks. Yes, in fact, yes, please. I'm sorry. Yes, please. Any questions?
Sorry, I'm new here, so I don't know how all of this works yet. The audit around properties you mentioned, is that TOT? What's the acronym?
Mm-hmm. TOT, or transient occupancy tax.
Oh, that's the, okay.
Also sometimes referred to as a bed tax.
Yes, that is happening next year?
It happens annually.
Okay.
We just finally have the draft reports for the audit that occurred this calendar year.
Okay, gotcha. Thanks, I just didn't know the acronym.
Okay, thank you for that update and report. Appreciate that. Any other questions of finance over this? Okay. Okay, now we come to, yes, consent, public comment. Yeah, public comment. Yeah, the next item on the agenda would be for the public comment. I'm not seeing anybody in our audience wanting to comment today, although it's an obvious sellout crowd. Is there anybody in the queue that would like to speak today?
Chair, there are no raised hands in the queue.
Oh, okay. Okay, so we will move on from public comment at this point, and we will go to Section A, which would be the consent calendar. We have three items on consent. Would anybody like to have a discussion on any one of these three items real quick before we move to approve? I'm not seeing anybody who wants to comment on the three items that we have on here. Do I hear a motion to adopt the consent calendar?
I'll move to adopt the consent calendar.
Second.
We have a motion and a second that's on the floor right now. If we could call a roll on that.
Member Dorfman?
Yes.
Member Love?
Yep.
Vice Chair Woody?
Yes.
Member Johnson?
Yes.
Okay.
Motion passed.
Okay. Next up is we have our business items here today. The first one being a discussion of CFAC's budget development approach to schedule with a recommendation to discuss and consider staff recommendations to utilize the budget information presented at the January and February CFAC meetings to guide the development of future year Measure E budget recommendations. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Okay, so we brought this item to you today from a request of the committee that you all would like to have more meaningful participation in the budget development. And we, of course, support that and welcome that. So then the question is, how do we make that happen within the five meetings we have throughout the year? So without just reading a report to you here, basically we provide our year-end numbers to you in January, and we provide our mid-year numbers to you in February. And so that, and those numbers also come along with the last few years of history. So between those two meetings and staff reports, I would recommend that that we don't need to try to add another meeting. Staff really can't support another meeting in the spring. So use all that information and agendize items to give feedback and recommendations to budget development for the future year.
Okay, so let me just start by saying, is there anything particular, just to make sure I understand this item, is there anything particular you're looking for us to do at this point then on this particular item?
I think we're looking for you to support just using those two meetings for future year budget development.
Okay. Comments from CFAC members about this proposal? I'd like to say from the very beginning, yeah, I think this is actually a really productive way to go. I think you guys do an amazing job and a very productive job year after year. How you guys do all this, I don't know. I really don't. It's way beyond my pay grade of how you guys make these budgets happen year after year. It's absolutely incredible. I'm fine with the meeting schedules, the proposals, and how we do everything here, largely because we do, as members of CFAC, have such a really good relationship with members of the council, the entire council, and the mayor when it comes to any of these items. Their ability to be accessible to all of us for anything has been just fantastic. Maybe I'm just speaking for myself, but they've always been there to, you know, listen to us, to take recommendations, to hear, you know, concerns we might have. So in that note, I'd just like to say, yeah, I think this is really a good way to do this. And knowing candidly how, as the phrase is said, incredibly overworked you guys can be at sometimes, especially when it comes to budget, it's just nonstop. So that being said, any comments from CFAC members?
I just think you all are a great resource, and I think we should keep this in mind with the future subcommittee and revenue recommendations and discussions as well, kind of the January, February timeline.
Okay, that being said, I do have a question, though. I don't have revenue. No, I'll save that for agenda B2. I'm sorry, for the next agenda item that we have coming up. So on agenda item B1, let's turn it over to, is there anybody in the public that would like to comment on this? Obviously, nobody in the audience. Is there anybody in the queue wanting to comment on item B1?
No, Chair, there are no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, so there's no raised hands in the queue. At this point, being that I'm feeling like there's a consensus on this board about this agenda item, Do you need a motion to accept this item and accept the recommendations as presented to us?
You don't have to take any formal action. You may make a motion to support staff's recommendation, or you can just simply take no action.
I'm just seeing this as just taking no action, that we accept it. We accept this report, and we're okay with that. Okay. Okay.
Excellent. Thank you all.
Okay. The next item on the agenda is item B2, the fiscal year 23-24 general fund and Measure E sales and use tax unaudited revenue. And the floor is yours.
Back to me. Okay. So this item is coming to you as a suggestion from Chair Peck, just to get a preview at our unaudited revenues for 23-24 and a trend over time looking at the performance, and he thought this would also benefit our subcommittee. So I'm going to give you the disclaimer now that the data is good. I didn't have a whole lot of time to polish up the presentation. Okay. So, disclaimer given. Okay, can everybody see this okay? We're looking at the sales and use tax from 2018 through 2024 unaudited. I'll try not to say that too many times, but just remember we haven't finished our audit yet, and then our 2025 budgeted amount. So there's not a whole lot. I mean, this paints a pretty good picture that the revenues have more than doubled since 2018, and this is the general fund is largely stable for that period, and it's the measures Q and E revenue that have increased so much over time. So from approximately $3 million in 2018 to about $7.29 in the unaudited 2024 numbers. The Measure Q revenues were approximately $1 million in 2018, and in 2024, Measures Q and E combined are $4.51 million, and that came in very close to the budgeted amount of $4.55 million. There's another snapshot just at the split 2024 revenue. 37.2% is the general fund, and 62.8% is from Measures Q and E. And it gets a little bit confusing, but the state has now essentially combined Q and E into a single apportionment, single payment to us. So it's mostly recorded under Measure E, which is why you hear staff referring to these dollars as Measure E. In this chart, we're looking at the general fund and Measure Q and E split out separately. The general fund in blue and Measures Q and E in green. Here we start getting into the real nitty gritty detail. And this wasn't in your agenda, so you have plenty of time to look this over, right? Because you're not going to absorb it all here. And I don't know if it would really be helpful to read every line out to you, but I wanted to make sure that you had this information. So this is looking at actuals for 2021, 2022, 2023, and unaudited 2024. And another benefit to this table is that it compares the 2024 actuals to the budgeted amounts, so you can see how each line performed. So we brought in just over $2.5 million in the Bradley Burns sales tax and budgeted $2.5 million. Prop 72 came in a bit higher, at about $230,000 versus $190,000 budgeted. And the general fund total was $2.77 million. And we budgeted $2.69, so pretty good. We're pretty proud of ourselves on that one. You can see there under the, can you see if I do that? No. The Measure Q, under Q and E, the Measure Q. Oh, you can see it, thank you. Getting tech support, okay. This is what I was explaining with, no, I can't do it. Stand by, okay. This is what I was referring to with Measure Q declining over time. It's not actually declining. It's just being combined into this Measure E from the state. It's split out this way because we have two separate account codes on our books for these two different taxes. So 1 million in 2021 for Measure E and about 1 million for Measure Q, and then the actual unaudited this year is at 4.56.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, sir.
Just for the people listening,
yeah.
Define the difference between audited and unaudited.
We haven't formally had our books looked at by our auditors.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So I'm going to make sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So they will come in and just give us, they'll review every little thing and let us know if everything looks right.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Right, that's what, basically.
Yeah.
Without getting too technical about it. It's a long process. It started in July and it should wrap up in December. So we will have our final audit report to council in the January meeting. Is there anything else you want to look at? We also are presenting to you the different property taxes, again, from 2021 to 2024. And this might be helpful just looking at trends and increases over time for our subcommittee. If there weren't any specific questions on this one, I'll just move on to the next one. And
just a minute.
Sure.
Because that's important data.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that in the future, then, we're just going to call everything just under the title of Measure E funds, then, since they're being combined at this point? Instead of keep saying Q and E.
No, staff tends to, but there is some, it's still important in the community that Measure Q is recognized because mm-hmm. they were two different ballot initiatives, and we do understand that. It just becomes cumbersome verbally and in writing to continually say Q and E. But so the two ballot measures are still in place.
Okay.
But the state's just combining the payments.
Okay.
You can go ahead. Melissa's going to add to that.
I think that if you attempted to modify the measure, that you would be modifying Measure E at this point. You would not be, if we decided we wanted to reduce our taxes and take away the original 0.5 Measure Q, you would actually just be reducing Measure E by 0.5% at this point. So they're administering it as one as well. So yes, there were two separate ballot measures, and there's like a legislative intent that is attempted to be honored.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, I think the big thing when I go through meetings like this is making sure that nothing is miscommunicated to the general public. When they start seeing, and they wake up one day and they say, what happened to Measure Q? That there's a vernacular thing going on here at this point, but it never disappeared.
Member Johnson, can we move on? But then
you
can always
yes.
email any questions you might have.
Sure.
Okay. So this is just the second piece of the property taxes or intergovernmental funds. Not too much change on this one. It's a small amount of money and a small amount of increase. Here we have our franchise fees, and there's a little bit more to look at on this one. You'll see a large jump in garbage specifically, and I believe natural gas. Both of those, the customers or the ratepayers saw an increase to those services. I cannot remember the percent, but garbage increased by almost 30%, thank you. And so that's what you're seeing reflected there from the $287,000 in 2021 to then $430,000 in 2024. Much higher than we had budgeted because the increase took place after budget was completed. And that's a similar story for the natural gas. From $36,000 in 2021 to almost $61,000 in 2024. Whereas we budgeted $43,000 not knowing of the increase coming down. On the bottom there, we see general business licenses and transient vendor fees. Transient vendor fees is split out because those are for events such as Art in the Park. That's a common one. They're just getting a short term or one day or one weekend type of business license. So we have seen an increase from 2021 through 2024, and 2021 was actually a dip that was still considered a COVID year when the city had decided not to enforce renewals due to the revenue challenges folks were experiencing. This is representing the measures Q&E and Prop 172 and Bradley Burns again here. Just as because it was already in the chart, I thought I'd present it to you in another way. Same data you saw before, although the previous chart started at 2018, so it gives you a longer trend to look at. And the transient occupancy tax. 2021 was lower with that 3.8, and then we're looking at a just shy of $4.5 million for 2024. And here is another chart you might find helpful in your review. It's color coding the different revenue types that we just looked at. And looking at, it just gives you a good idea of the portion or percentage that each contributes to the overall revenue to the city. So the largest being property taxes, followed by the TOT or transient occupancy tax, then sales and use tax, and revenues from current services, which would be, and I wanted to point out to you, revenues from use in money and property. That is mostly rental income on city-owned properties and interest revenue. And this is just... No, this is just the general fund, right?
I have a question on property tax. Just because I see it's the percentage hasn't gone up very strong, although the property values in Morro Bay continue to really accelerate. And I'm not totally familiar with how this, I think Steve's mentioned something about how a lot of people move here and they take their, I don't know, Prop 13 exemptions.
Right,
so
exactly.
Do you have data a little bit on like what percentage of properties are affected by that and if that's changing over time?
I don't have data on that. That would be based on the specific property owner, right, and where they came from.
Right.
I don't have that. The county may. I did speak with the head of the department for the county, the tax office, and she's very helpful, which is wonderful for us. And she said that this is common throughout the cities in our county, that we don't see a big rise in our property taxes because the
higher percentages of
So while
migrating retirees.
Yes. So while values might be going up, our property taxes won't rise at the same level.
Okay.
That's the last slide I had for you today. Were there any other questions on anything?
This is really insightful, so thank you, Emily and Melissa, for sharing. I was just kind of going back to the first slide where you mentioned that I think it was Q&E had nearly doubled since 2018. And again, I moved here in 2022, and so I haven't seen like all of this kind of play out in real life, and I'm wondering if you can share any other kind of like narratives around why that's the case.
So Q was implemented before E, or adopted before E, so that was only a 0.5% tax, whereas Measure E was a full 1% tax. So I think that's why you see that bigger jump. I think it was November 2020, where that was on the ballot. So 2021 is when we saw that first revenues coming in and increases since then.
Plus that was the start year was a COVID affected year. So that is a very anomalous base.
Yes,
but
yeah, exactly. Thank you.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your obvious incredible amount of work that you guys put into all this. I have one request on this for our upcoming January meeting 3 months from now.
Yes.
Okay. I was speaking with our police chief last week. Now, I'm going to make this request, and I'm going to preface this by saying, I asked her if it was okay to ask you guys for this, and she said, oh, it's easy. It's no big deal. It's not a big deal. So if there's a problem, you have her phone number. You can contact her. This is not on me.
Oh, boy.
For the upcoming budget, I was wondering if you could also include in our January meeting, because as we're going through the Major E, there are two part-time positions in the police department that are listed as a 0.8, 32 hours per week positions. And one of them is a records clerk and a property evidence clerk. They're both as a 0.8 at this point. Mm-hmm. Can you include in your staff report, nothing elaborate, the police chief said this is okay to ask for this. Can you include what it would take to bump those to full-time positions? I'm saying this in terms of just a tremendous amount of work that they have to do in there and what's going on in there. I would be curious to see what would it take to move those two items to a full-time position, as well as we also have a homeless outreach case manager that we split 50% of the time with, gosh darn it, is either Atascadero
City of Atascadero.
Thank you. Okay, thank you. We split that with the City of Atascadero as a 50% position. What would it take to create a full-time position out of that? Now, I bring this up because it was brought to my attention very recently by a presentation that I saw through the police department that more than, if I have this right, more than 70% of our calls for services are for homeless and mental health phone calls. Mm-hmm. And so that was pretty eye-opening when I heard that. But at any rate, so when I look at those two positions, I think it's something that I'd like to see discussed during this next budget hearing, amongst many other things we're going to discuss. But if you could somehow bring back in the next meeting what it would take to fund those three positions into full-time for future discussion, that would really be appreciated. And the police chief said that was okay to ask, and she said it wasn't a big deal. So if it's a big deal, you have her phone number.
Noted. Okay, so this is a future agenda item?
I'm not sure if would you do it as a future agenda item or just include it in the staff report for January when we're discussing budget items?
We'll figure it out.
There you go. That's what I need. Okay.
So you would like to know the finance, like how much it would cost?
What's the impact to the budget to make these three positions full-time?
Make them full-time.
Yeah. If that would be okay. Mm-hmm. And if it's not okay, you have her phone number. You can reach out to her.
We can do that.
Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Are there any other comments from CFAC on this particular item? Is this an item that we can just go ahead and accept and not have to necessarily vote on, but just go ahead and accept the item?
Receive and file, yes, sir.
Okay. It is received then. Okay. Then that would be that item there, received and filed. At this point, we're moving on to future agenda items under C. I don't see anything listed under there. I don't see any items that we're going to put on there unless there's members that want to put an item on there. Or
this is an opportunity to request agenda items for the future meetings.
I have no items.
No more?
You have no, because I've been here long enough to know that look from city staff. So no, there will be no future agenda items. The next item we have on here is to schedule the next meeting, which is January 21st of 2025. We're halfway through the decade. So I would assume that's still scheduled for January 21st then?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Member Peck will be here. He'll bringing us cookies, obviously. Yes. And yes. In fact, it's supposed to be from Europe from what I understand. I'm sure he'll hear this because Chairman Peck is, a bit OCD with this. Finance stuff, so I'm sure he'll be watching this video from Europe. Are there any other items? So we can go ahead and adjourn?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Well, we are so adjourned today then. Thank you so much.
Adjourned at 4:07.